I hope you're ready to soak it in. Hi everybody, I'm Stevie B. I'm a grateful believer, I'm a recovering alcoholic, and I'm a member of the Golden Text Group in Dania.
Amen.
People have been asking me when that is. It's at 7:45 or 8, depending on which week, in Dania. What is it, 7:45 or 8?
7:45.
It's 8 o'clock, so it's you got to be there at 7:45, kind of like this meeting. And then all the festivities start at 8 o'clock. This is totally not on the step, but today at JC's we had we painted the compound in Cuban coffee colors, and tomorrow we're gonna start from 9 to 5 selling cafecito over there and empanadas. So yes, you're doing it, Josiah. I just wanted to say that. So I'd like you to get there early and start baking early. The big book says that we should absolutely enjoy our sobriety, that we absolutely insist on enjoying ourselves. And if you're not, first of all, if you have a seat next to you, we just raise your hand. If you have an open seat next to you, raise your hand. Guys, I need you guys to sit down. 12-step house wants everyone sitting. Thanks, guys.
Have fun in your sobriety.
Thank you, brother. Bring you back. I was only speaking for a second. I'm still on point at this moment. If you're not enjoying your sobriety, it's very important to change things around. I absolutely in love every single day of my sobriety. This is Valentine's night. And I would, normally be out at a restaurant or something with my wife. And then I see that you guys, who some of you have wives and husbands, you're here tonight. Jerry's here with his wife. And I see some of you guys are here with your spouses or your girlfriends or your boyfriends. And you might even have left them at home to come here. My point is, every single night is a holiday. Every single night is a holiday, right? Tiffany, you're newly married, and is that Jeremiah? Jeremiah's here tonight. Wow, that's so cool. Well, happy Valentine's Day to all the new couples. That's so cool. Let's give everybody a round of applause. That's awesome. Every night in Alcoholics Anonymous is a holiday. It really is, because any night that I don't have to figure out where I'm going to be getting my stuff for the rest of the night, if I'm going to be arrested, if I have to come to, if I have enough stuff to get me through the night, if I'm going to go into intense paranoia after 5 minutes or 5 hours. So that's always a pre-planning type of process for me, because I have intense paranoia from using. It's always a crapshoot for me, which means sometimes it could be, hours before I start getting crazy, but sometimes it could be minutes before I'm hiding behind the air conditioning unit in the motel room, and they're very small, those air conditioning units. It's really very hard to hide behind an air conditioning unit, but I try, I really do. I try to hide behind them. I never know if it's going to be a good experience, or I never know I'm going to go into an intense situation where I just know the police are there, they're about to bust through the door. Tony, we've been there together. And I know they're about to bust in the door, and there's a couch, and I see a couch, and a couch is normally a chair that you would sit on, but to me it looks like an amazing hiding place. So I push it away from the wall, and I jimmy myself behind the couch. But I'm kind of a big guy to jimmy myself, but I still think it's a great hiding place, and I just stay really, really tight, really close, and I just go like this, and I pretend the police are going to go right by me. And I don't have to do that. I don't have to do that. I remember one of my last drunks. Of course, I use the word drunk, and I really mean drunk. But one of my last drunks was in a hotel room on Federal Highway, and the paranoia was so intense. And in my specific room, they had the maintenance room. In my I just want to recommend, just in case you're ready to go on a run, I wouldn't get that specific room that has the maintenance room in your room if you have paranoia problems. So it seemed like it was going to work out, but it was not, because the noises that come out of that room really are the scariest thing you've ever seen if you have paranoia problems. So I'm in there 5 minutes, and I just know the entire Hollywood police are hiding in that maintenance room. After that, every day of my life, I may have bad hours, and I've experienced bad things that have happened to me in the last 17 years, absolutely. But to me, I feel like every day is a new, exciting possibility of a day. God's mercies are new every day. And but one of the ways that we're going to be, tonight we're going to get down to some work. I know the last couple weeks have been fun, and I've had a great time here. I want to thank Amanda and everyone that asked me to come here, Tammy Joe. And you have a great group here. It's one of the finest groups I've been to tonight. And we... It took the guy with 17 years to pick up on that. We're going to talk tonight about step 4, and then I have an amazing speaker that's going to be finishing up step 5 next week. So I'm going to start with step 4, 5. And then I have an incredible speaker. Am I allowed to say who that is, Tammy Jo? For next week? Okay, well, she's going to be great. She's going to be awesome. And it's going to be Tammy Jo, and she's going to it's going to be incredible. But before we get into step 4, I want to just speak about gratitude. I want to speak about gratitude because I remember when I was in treatment and I just had 6.5 years and I relapsed, and I knew I was never going to relapse into my drug of choice. I knew I was just going to drink alcohol socially because I had so much time and I never had a problem with alcohol. Alcohol was never my drug of choice. And I could take or leave alcohol before I came into the program. But then after I came into the program and I was told that I couldn't drink alcohol, and before the program I never wanted to drink alcohol. But as soon as they said when I came into the program when I was 21 years old that now you can't drink alcohol, from that day forward, I wanted to drink alcohol. The day before I came into the program, I could drink alcohol with and it didn't matter. But the moment I came in and they said you can't drink, I always fantasized about having a drink. I always thought, well, I know I can't do drugs, but maybe at least I would be able to have a cocktail someday if I got, you know, later on in life. So when I turned 30 years old, 29 years old, I got married. And I had two businesses, and I had some money in the bank, and I had two cars in the garage, and I figured this is a perfect time to try some drinking. And if you're here for the first time tonight, I tried some controlled drinking, and it didn't work. It did for a while. I was able to control it for a while, but that's exhausting. Trying to control drinking and using is exhausting. I don't know about you. This is the easier, softer way for me. Like, the most I had to think about today was hair gel. Definitely stocked up. Toothpaste, stocked up. Clean shirt, pants, underwear, stocked up. Everything clean, underarms. I didn't have to think about anything about using. I didn't have to know I was going to get my stuff. It was going to be the right stuff. It was going to be fake stuff. I was going to get drunk. I was going to get arrested. You know, I haven't been arrested. I was telling someone the other day, I was arrested a lot. Richie, you know, we were arrested a lot. I was arrested all the time. In 2002... Hi. It's okay. I liked it. In 2002, I just didn't know who it was. In 2002, I'm sorry, 2001, I was arrested 4 times in 2001, and I was never used to, I was not a person that got arrested. In 2001, I was arrested for sleeping in my car, which I thought was ridiculous, and I told the police officer that was ridiculous, and I also told him I paid his salary, and he didn't like that at all. And so I was arrested for that, and then I was arrested for driving under the influence, and I really wasn't under the influence. I took Ambien, and I went driving. I was going to have a hypnotic drive, and I wound up in going southbound in the northbound lane in Golden Isles, and then I got a bunch of felonies involved in that, and I think that's it. And then I got arrested for some disorderly stuff, you know, some minor altercations. And then in 2002, January 3rd, 2002, I got sober, and I've never been arrested since then. I've never been arrested. As a matter of fact, I've been pulled over 2 or 3 times in the last 17 years, and I've always had a wonderful conversation with the police officer. No, because I'm always trying to bring someone either to God or to sobriety, or just trying to, you know, win them over with, you know, just having a great conversation. Like, By the time I finished with this one police officer in Dania, we were like friends. I felt like he knew me. I was like, did I know you? He said, do I know you? And I said, I don't think you know me, but I prefer you not to give me a ticket. And he didn't. You know, we talked about church. We talked about sobriety. We talked about God. He said, have a wonderful day. My last 17 years have been nothing but a blessing, and some of the days have been incredibly hard. Some of the days have been incredibly sad. But every single day, I'm incredibly grateful. Right, Don? We still, as long as we have that attitude of gratitude, we're going to get to the next day. In order to do that, we're going to have to clear away a bunch of the garbage that we come into the program with. We come in to day one of sobriety with everything that we've had before day one. We bring it into the program with us. A lot of you, or some of you, may have two lives. You did a bunch of bad stuff before you came into the program. Now you're sober and you do a bunch of good stuff. That was not my experience. I did a bunch of bad stuff sober for 6.5 years. I took that horse thief that I was. I got sober, and then I was a sober horse thief in Alcoholics Anonymous. I changed not that much stuff. So this time around, when I came into the program in January of 2002, and I got myself a sponsor, a tough sponsor, Jerry Bear and Russell Spatz, and I definitely recommend you get yourself a sponsor who's like a mentor. I mean, you wouldn't join a company and go into the company. You didn't know how to do the job. You would not be trained on it. You wouldn't become a doctor and just say, you know, although I tried it, to become a doctor without having any training. But most doctors are going to have degrees, and they're going to have passed boards, and they're going to have trained, right? You wouldn't want a doctor that just felt like he could be a doctor one day, and then you walk in and you go, what are your credentials? He goes, no, I just have a lot of enthusiasm. Now I'm going to scrub up and we're going to operate in a second. You would want to have a doctor that's been trained. You're going to want to have a trainer, and your trainer is your sponsor. And I was blessed early on to have some great sponsors. I still have great sponsors, and I say sponsors because for me, I have a couple different men in my life. I've always had a couple different men in my life. Now one of them is my pastor and my sponsors that forms a team of people that can help shape and mold my life. So my sponsor, he said to me, you're going to write your fourth step. And I had already been in the program 6.5 years, so I figured I had this down. I really actually thought I could take my last fourth step, which was when I was 22 in Hazleton, where Mason and I went. He went to the adult program. I went to the kids program. I really felt like I could take that same fourth step and maybe tweak it a little bit, you know? But then when I took that fourth step out, when now I'm 30, I realized the stuff that I had at 21 was really not that serious, you know, not that serious, like fraternity stuff and all that kind of stuff. So I had my sponsor said to me, you're going to need to do a fourth step, and I want you to fly out to California, and we're going to do it together, and I'll tell you a story about that in a minute. And then he sent me the questions. The great thing about, by the way, did I tell you last week that this was going to be a work week, that maybe you could bring pens? I see nobody did that, but that's fine. The talks are on rocketed.org. It really, tonight is going to teach you how to do a four step, and it's also going to show you the value of it. My sponsor said to me, he sent me the four-step guides. But right now, in 2019, which is amazing, if you go to the Google line and you type in AA inventory sheets, it's already made for you. You just have to hit print. And then all these sheets come out. And then they also have pre-sheets, which talks about what the four-step is about. And it does all this work for you. It's incredible. You just have to know which one to load. The first two that are in there, that are in PDF forms, are amazing. And the sheets that are going to come out are going to talk about the four horsemen of the apocalypse. One is going to talk about fear. And fear is the underlying factor where most of us live. Afraid of yesterday, afraid of today, afraid of tomorrow. Afraid of not being liked, afraid of not having enough money, afraid of being alone, afraid of being... I saw a funny video yesterday, it has nothing to apply to this, but this, if you ever have a chance to go to YouTube and to download Bob, I guess maybe it's not called downloading, but if you search for YouTube Bob Newhart, stop it. don't know if you've ever seen it. It's one of the most, the funniest things. Don, have you seen it? It's the most funniest thing in the world. This woman had a fear of being buried alive. Whatever your fear is, the fear inventory sheets are going to help you. I have fear of being arrested. I was always afraid to be arrested. I don't have that fear today. But when I first came in, I was afraid to be arrested. I was afraid my wife was going to leave me. I was afraid I was going to be alone. Afraid to die. You know, all that stuff. Afraid of the police. That's the fear sheets. And then there's the harms caused other sheets. And if you're anything like me, I've done a lot of harms towards others in and out of sobriety. Some people only have done harms to people when they were drunk. I've done harms to people in sobriety. Not so much this specific sobriety, although I have. But my previous sobriety, I had did a lot of harms, and I acted in a very not in an ungodly way my first 6.5 years of my previous sobriety. I didn't act like the person that I wanted to be. And that's harms caused other. Inside harms caused other, there can be stealing. Raise your hand if you've ever done any stealing. I just want to make sure, because you guys are looking like totally blank tonight. And harms caused others is fighting. Where's the girl from Long Island? I knew you were from Long Island. The moment you opened your mouth, I knew you were from Long Island. What part of Long Island are you from? Nassau County. Yeah, Nassau. She's from Nassau. And just roughly, how many fist fights have you been in your life? Just roughly. That's four. That meant four. Where we're from in Long Island, it's almost taught in school. It's like you hit first and ask forgiveness later. So I was just doing that all the time. I was hitting people all the time. I'm not saying I'm a good fighter. I'm just saying I hit people all the time. And so the way that Mason and I got to be, because he's from Queens. I mean, yeah, he's from Queens, which is really Long Island with steroids. And we were living in a halfway house together around the corner from here, Liberty House. And I was there first. Me and Eddie were there first. And I don't know if you've ever been to a halfway house where I like to grab the couch. I'm a couch guy. Even though this halfway house, I was only with one of the guys. Eddie was my roommate. I liked to sleep on the couch because I was on Seroquel at the time. And then you're closer to the refrigerator. And Mason, he didn't get that. That was my couch. He didn't get that. When the owner brought him in, he didn't point out that this specific couch, this white L couch, was my couch. First of all, he didn't know it was my couch because he owned the house and he never seen me on it. But every night I would get myself into the couch and one night I decided to stay in the bedroom and I came out and Mason was on the couch and I hadn't met him. And I said to him, "Who's on the couch?" Right? I didn't know Mason was from Queens. You know, I didn't ask him where he was. First of all, I should have asked him where he was from first. So the way we met is we went full out blows, right? Five guys separating us because of the couch. And obviously he had grown up the same way I grew up. You know, hit first and ask for forgiveness later. And that's what we both did. We both attacked each other and hugged each other. How I met Anthony Philly is I threw a chair at him at the same halfway house. I called him Uncle Fester. He used to be bald and I threw a chair at him. That's how I met most of my friends, to be honest with you, back in the day. So needless to say, and that's all true. That's all true. I'm not making it up. This is all true. We were in a halfway house together, and it was basically, you know, like the Thunderdome. You best man standing is really the person who gets the bet. And this is a long time ago. You know, it's almost 20 years ago. I know that's not the way it is now. So when I started to write the 4-step, I had a lot of harms caused others. Anthony's on my harms caused others. Mason is on my harms caused other because I've been rude to him over the years. I've said nasty things. I haven't been a perfect friend. I'm not that great on making birthdays and all that kind of stuff. I have to write all that stuff down. Nothing goes unnoticed. Nothing goes unnoticed. Because anything that you say is no big deal, that's a big deal. So that's harms caused others. And now we're going to get to, you notice I'm leaving some of the juicier stuff for the later. Okay? Of course, there's the sexual harms. There's sexual harms. That's obvious. I don't need to get so much into sexual harms. We all realize what sexual harms is, right? But I didn't know what it was. So I started to write my four-step, and I'm writing all the girls I've ever been with. And I'm not saying that's a lot, because it's not. It's not a lot. I'm writing, you don't know everybody's name. Will we all agree that? Can we all just agree on that? Right? Right? The girl from Long Island's like, she may not have fought a lot, but she did something else. She's like this. Yep. So, I'm writing on my four-step.
You're the man.
I'm an over in a man. Don't worry, by the end of the night, I'll have you. You'll be on my new four-step. So I'm writing people's descriptions. You know, where it's from. Okay, college, four college, person I said hello to at the bar, all this kind of stuff. And then my sponsor said to me, this is not a list of people you've been with. Okay, this is not a brag list. It's not a list of people you've been with. This is a list of people you harmed. Unless you're some type of, freak. Every person you've been with, you have not harmed. This is a place where you're going to put down what you did wrong. You lied to someone and told them that they were the only one. Then you put that down. You took advantage of someone if they were drunk or that, you put that down. You start putting down the stuff, and then guess what happens? Then it's not so funny. I'm just putting down all my girls I met in college, And then he's like, no, you better go deeper than that. Take this back. This is not a list for you to impress me. First of all, I'm not impressed. So take this back, and then I realize there's some people I've really harmed. What are the people I lied to, and I said, you're the only one, and I dated another girl the next day, and I told her she's the only one, and then I dated another girl the next day, and they all found out. That can scar people. You don't play with people's hearts like that. But I thought that was okay. Just like I thought fist fighting was okay. No, it's not okay. Because say that I'm standing in front of my Lord and Savior, my God, and I'm like, yes, this girl I lied to, and this girl I lied to, and this girl I lied to, and this girl I made a promise to, and this girl I left standing at the airport, and I said I would be there, and I never... And then my Lord and Savior is going to be like, well, that's not okay, right? So I need to put it down. Because here's really the most important thing. You don't want to still carry that in AA. You don't want to carry that garbage in your AA affairs. You want to be able to dump that. And by the way, I'm not just talking about drunk. I was a very bad guy sober before this period of sobriety. And what I mean by bad guy, I was not a guy with integrity. Okay, I was not a guy in integrity. I would tell you one thing and do another. And that's not an integrity. So the sexual harms, that's not easy. And plus, also this. There's sexual things here you're never going to tell anybody, right? In this, you're going to tell somebody. You're going to get a sponsor, and you're going to, or a mentor, or a pastor, or a rabbi that you fully trust, and you're going to tell that person your harms or stuff you're embarrassed about. I told my sponsor everything. There's nothing that I held back, but I tried to. Okay, I held back a whole section of stuff that I figured it probably is not going to be very important to him, although it's very, very important to me. And that doesn't count. Because in the fourth step, it says that we have to uncover every nook and cranny. Okay, which means we have to go deep. It's a searching and fearless moral inventory. And what I think is okay, maybe my sponsor thinks that it's not okay. And this is what I want to share with you. I didn't write this one thing down. Anyway, by the way, it's not a big thing. By the way, all you people that think you have like huge things and no one's ever heard your thing before and nobody's ever experienced your thing because you're from the South and you're from farm country or something like that. No, everybody's heard everything. Okay, everybody's heard everything. Okay? That you lied to the person you're in their halfway house and you told them that this was your brother and it's not your brother, it's actually your lover. We've heard it all. Okay, we've heard it all. There is nothing that you have that another person doesn't have. It's just a different flavor. You understand? And once you know that, and if you have a good sponsor, then your sponsor is going to say, listen, I get that, and let me tell you what I did. And it's going to be no big deal. The only big deals on a four-step is what you don't say. And I'm going to get to that in another couple minutes. Okay, and now I want to go to the most important category. But all those three categories are important. What do you say, Gil? Those are important categories. But here is really one of the most important categories. You ready for this? Resentments. You're going to have the resentment one. And I recommend starting with the, not starting the way I did it. I did it in order of least importance. I recommend you start with the resentments. And I recommend you start with just putting, going all the way back when you were a young person and writing it and going back all and then finishing up now. This is what I do. I get before my God and I say to God, God, and I get into a quiet place and I say, God, I just ask you to reveal these things to me that I would not be able to come up with without your help. Please illuminate every dark past of mine. Because if you just like hang out and you're like drinking Red Bulls and smoking cigarettes and BSing and then you go to write a four-step, none of that stuff is really going to come to the surface that needs to come to the surface. Amen? Amen. So you want to get really, really get close and alone with God, and you want to have an area that you can write your stuff down, and you want to say to God, please remind me of all the things I've done in my life. Now, people always want to make more of the four step than it is. Like, I'm working on my four step. I'm working on my four step. I'm working on my four step. I did my four step on a plane ride from Fort Lauderdale to California. Okay, one plane ride. Now, I didn't want to do it that way. My sponsor gave me 6 months. And every week he'd ask me if it was ready. And I go, absolutely. I just basically made the columns. We didn't have back then where you can go to Google and just hit print. So my whole preparation for the fourth step was I made the columns. You know, I made the first column, I made the second column, I made the resentment column, I made all that column. Where was I responsible for it? On my way to California on a 5-hour plane ride and a 2-hour layover, I did my entire fourth step. And you know what I did? I prayed. And I asked God to move my pen through the whole thing. And you know what? Stuff started to come up. And this is how I started. I started from when I was a little kid. I felt low self-esteem since I was a little kid. I started with, I'm not going to say last names because it's being recorded. But I started with Tommy G. Tommy G when I was 5 years old. Tommy G left me in the playground and left, we call it flat leaving in New York. He flat leave me and I had resentment against him and I felt like nobody wanted to play with me and I was the only kid that didn't have a big brother and I had a little chubby sister and I started, and the pen started to flow. And then of course I wrote the guy that shot me in the eye and when I was writing that he shot me in the eye, I was really resentful and by the time I finished, I realized I was responsible for me getting shot in the eye. See, that's what's going to be the amazing thing. You're going to write Joey and Sally and Andy and you're going to write all these names that you think harmed you. And then in the column that says, where were you at fault? A lot of them, you're at fault. Not all of them. I want you to know, people say you're at fault for all of them. Absolutely not. If you've been molested or raped or any kind of stuff, you have no, that's not, you know when you're at fault, right? But I gave the gun to the guy. And he shot me. And he didn't intend to shoot out my eye, but he did. My whole life I was carrying that. When I finally said it out loud, I realized it's my gun. I gave it to the guy. I participated and came up with the game of shooting at each other. I did. I made the game up. I was like, well, move fast. And I didn't move fast enough. And I lost my eye. And my whole life I've been very sensitive about that and very, very angry. And after my fifth step, I realized I just totally let him off the hook. It's not his fault. It's my fault. I had a part to play in it. You know what I'm saying? So that the resentments part is amazing. And then, of course, I had my dad, because my dad is a very strong guy from Long Island, and he's a strong guy. And I grew up in an era where dads didn't discuss their feelings with you. I don't know about you, Fitzy. My dad wasn't a big feelings guy. My dad would just whack you, and then when you came to, talk about what you did wrong. That was more of the way I grew up. So I never used the word abuse. I never used the word abuse, but my dad definitely smacked me around. He was a smacker. And so I had to write all that down. But you know, after I wrote the fourth step, guess what? I realized my dad had to smack me around. You know why? Because I needed a smacking. I was a real troublemaker. I was trying to make trouble between him and my mom. I was trying to make trouble between my dad and my sister. I was a troublemaker. I'm not saying I needed to be abused. I'm not saying that. That would be ridiculous. But I did need correction. Okay? I did need correction. And my dad grew up in the 40s. And he didn't know about how to give a timeout. A timeout was, like I said, for timeout for me was my dad hit me so hard, knocked me to the other side of the room, and I was timed out. Richie, you know what I'm talking about. That's when we got timed out. However long you were passed out with your timeout. All right, you're out of your timeout now. Let's go. So I had all that stuff on there. But as I started to write it down, I realized this is overwhelming. This is page after page after page after page after page of garbage. Some people get stuck on their fourth step, not sharing it as a fifth step. That would be like continually putting garbage in a garbage pail and it starts to stink. And you got meat in there and chicken and all that stuff that's outside in the Florida weather. And it just starts to stink. And you do not dump it, you're going to have a big problem with a smell in your life. And I carried that, my first sobriety, I carried that four step around for years because I thought my sexual stuff was so, you know, bizarre. I shared with my sponsor. My sponsor was like, okay, when are you going to start sharing your sexual stuff? I'm like, that was it. That was my sexual stuff. He's like, that's it? It's really not that big of a deal. But on the resentments, the big book says that resentment is the number one offender. Okay? That more people go out because of resentments. And I have to say, I don't know if it's the number one offender. It says it on page 64, so I'm certainly not going to say it's not. But I got to tell you, resentment is a killer. Let's read what it says. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we have not been only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we can strengthen out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. Listen, this is where half the... You notice the room is not as packed as last week's room because I told you this is going to be the fourth step. This is where people don't move on. And you can find out if you're not moving on. So you have 9 months and you're still on the fourth step. You have not done a third step. If you are still doing the fourth step and you're 9 months, you didn't do the third step. And you're going to have to back up. Greg, you're going to be in a fourth step in a couple weeks from now. We're going to move fast. Because you don't want to be walking around with all that smelly garbage and you're F-bombing people and you're... You know what I did in one of the biggest meetings in Pompano before you came in, Fitzy, when John Williams was sharing and I thought I was like spiritual Steve and my sponsor was sharing. It was John Williams at the time. He was a famous guy. And Steve Schwartz was talking. Oh, I shouldn't have said his last name. I apologize. And now I can't tell the story. Anyway, I was so spiritual. I was so spiritual in that meeting that while my sponsor was talking about the fourth step, I felt that this guy was talking when my sponsor was talking. I didn't know he was from Brooklyn. I didn't know at that moment that he was from Brooklyn. I soon found out he was from Brooklyn. So where I'm from, the louder you talk, you usually can get stuff done without having to do any type of moving fast. But he was from the same place, so it didn't work out. And I was so spiritual that in a 150-person meeting, we went to blows and toppled over chairs and made a scene with Richard Endrick in there. He's passed away, so I can mention his last name. I do apologize for mentioning the last name a minute ago. And that's how spiritual I was. So believe me, I had a lot of garbage that I needed to get out. And I wronged that guy that I mentioned. I wronged him. I had to make amends to him many, many years. Many, many times I had to make amends to him for being just a jerk. And also to Tomer, who passed away, because he was involved in that. And I went over to Tom and I told him, you know, you're effing talking when my effing sponsor's speaking. Because back then I used to use a lot of F-bombs every couple sentences because F-bombs kind of are like juicy. And Tom looked over at me and he was like, what's wrong with you, kid? And I was like, you know, I thought that was the way to act. And I didn't know any better. And so I had a lot of things that I had to undo. Now I want to talk to you about a little bit about the fifth step, although Tammy Joe is going to knock it out of the park next week. But I want to tell you about my experience with the fifth step, because by the time I come back with the sixth step, I won't be able to tell you this story. So my sponsor paints this amazing picture. He's Jewish. I've always had Jewish sponsors. Even to this day, I have Jewish sponsors. Because Jews are like tough. You know, they don't put up with my nonsense. And so he told me, I want you to fly out to California, to San Francisco, and I'm going to take you up to the top of the mountain. And there's a cross on the top of the mountain in Muir Woods, or one of these woods. And I'm going to take you up there, and we're going to do the fifth step underneath the cross. You're going to love it. It's your Lord and Savior. We're going to put two chairs on top of the mountain, and it's just going to, it's going to be spiritual. It's going to be amazing. And so I fly out there. And while I'm flying out there, on the way there, my best friend dies.
Oh, wow.
He goes in for surgery, and he has his stomach surgery. His name is Danny Appel. I can also mention his last name because he's a member of this clubhouse. Before he died with 14 years of sobriety. And on my way there, he died. Now, I'm only in a halfway house at this time. But already in that halfway house, I developed such deep friendships with that man, and that man. That I had, it was a local call for me. I called Myron, my sponsor, who just passed away. May God rest his soul, Myron Azif, the locksmith for the county. And I called that man Mason, and I called that man Eddie, and we cried. They cried for me on the phone. They didn't. They cried for me. I was so broken. And on my way there, I was not a guy like now, unfortunately. And we're all cold to death now, unfortunately, because we lose a person a week now. But back then, I had not. I lost anyone in my life. That was my first loss. About 20 years ago, we didn't have a person dying every week. It was different. So that was a major loss for me. And I happened to have been given a gift to be sitting by Todd. By Todd gave me the gift to sit in first class because his dad worked there at the airline. I'm sitting in first class because it was a gift. And at that exact moment, the flight attendant comes over to me and she says, "Sir, would you like a drink?" And I'm 34 years old. I'm crying all over myself. It's sitting in that section. And she says to me, "Would you like a drink? I can get you anything you want." And you know what my flesh said? Yes. But my spirit said, absolutely not. I was in the middle of my fourth step. I had prayed that morning. I was spiritually fit as much as you can be at 9 months of sobriety. And I was prepared for whatever God threw at me. I certainly was not expecting that 2 weeks earlier my grandmother would die. And 2 weeks later my best friend would die. Within a 2 week period I lost two of the most important people in my life. But let me tell you something. I was in. And I was not looking to lose my sobriety during that time. I made it through there. I got to California. And on the way to my sponsor brings me... He's. I don't know if you know about the Pacific Coast Highway. You've seen it on TV. It's a very winding highway, you know, like where James Dean flew off and did all that stuff. And you've been there, Nancy, the Pacific Coast Highway. Well, I got motion sickness, okay? So it seems like it's going to be better than it is, right? So he's zooming in his little car. He's got one of these little Fiats or something, and he's zooming. And I'm sick, all right? And I'm like, "Jerry, we're not going to make it to this cross in the mountains. Let's just stop right here." And we stop right there. The reason I tell you this is we stop right there in the middle of a truck stop, right? And we did the fifth step right there on the side of the road. The place is not important. The content and the person you do it with and the God you give it to, that's what's important. And I was able to confess. There was this woman, I'm confessing, I'm crying, this woman with a little poodle, she keeps coming by like five times. I finally looked at her like, "Really? Come on, really? Give us a little break here." But I finally got most of it out. That's totally true what happened. She like passed her poodle by me like five times. I'm like, you know, there's a chicken and she keeps coming by and all that stuff. My sponsor says to me this, "Is that everything?" After about 4 hours, we moved three times because that lady would not leave us alone. We went to the woods. We did a bunch of things. My sponsor said to me, "Is that it? Is that everything? Have you told me everything?" And I felt like I told him enough. I mean, I feel like you tell someone 90% of your stuff, you get to keep 10% close to the vest. And he says, "Is that it?" And I said, "I got one more thing. It's not a big deal. I don't even really need to mention it." And I told him. And he says to me, "That's criminal behavior. That's against the law." I said to him, "Well, I'm not really going to carry through with it. It's just an idea that I was going to do." And you know, the moment I said it out of my mouth, I realized that my brain had convinced me that this was okay, and I was setting myself up for a relapse right down the road. The reason that the fifth step is admitted to God, to ourselves, and another human being is because the other human being is not the brain that created the problem. The other human being is going to tell you if you're completely whacked and you need to do more work. I had a guy a couple months ago, he came to me with one sheet of paper, like a menu. He's like, here's my four step, it's two sides.
It's a menu.
He'd never done it before. If I didn't give him feedback on it and tell him, listen, this needs to be about 75 more pages, he would have thought it would have been fine. And when I told my sponsor that I'm doing this one, I have this one other thing, I still have the equipment, I'm not going to use the equipment, but I just have it because I could probably sell the equipment, and my sponsor looked at me like, you're a very sick young man. And I didn't know. I had 9 months. I thought I was well along my way. Plus, I was hanging out, Mason had already relapsed once, so when I'm already feeling like I'm very well, you know what I mean? My sponsor looked at me and he said, thank God you came here because you were on your way to a relapse. And I didn't know it. You see, this is what I want to share with you, and I know it went long tonight, but we had a lot of good stuff we had to crow. Listen, you're going to be the last to know if you're on the road to a relapse. You know what I hear all the time now, being in the program now 27 years? You know what I hear all the time? Well, smack that guy next to you, sir. Just smack him right there. Smack him, smack him, smack him. Right in the head. In the head, sir. In the head. In the head. In the head. Just smack him. You know what I hear so many times? Now, I'm not even thinking about drinking. I'm not even thinking about getting high. People say it all the time on their way to a relapse. I see them 6 months down the road coming out of bark with their Winn-Dixie bag and the arrows sticking out of their tushy and they got that thing. I said, what happened to you? You told me you weren't even thinking about drinking. I didn't think I was thinking about drinking, but then I thought about drinking and I drank. You're going to be the last to know. When I picked up at 6.5 years, I was the last to know. We need people around us. We need a sponsor around us. We need a support group around us that says to us, you are going in the wrong direction. You need to readjust yourselves because wisdom comes from a multitude of counsel. And we don't want to use the same brain that created the problem to try to undo making the problem. And so I am so grateful that I have a whole team of people around me, and everybody that's around me at any time can tell me you're off. Jordan's told me I'm off. Many people tell me off. And you know what I said? Thank you. I didn't even know. I didn't even know I was off. My sponsor told me in San Francisco that day, thank God you told me you were about to relapse. And I didn't have to relapse. Next week, Tammy's going to hit it out of the park, and then I'll come back for six and seven in a couple weeks from now. God bless you guys. Thank you.